Dan to Cody, from Gillette to Rock Springs, this is Let's Talk Wyoming, your weekly dose of Wyoming politics. Because politics may be complicated, but I'm here to break it down and help you make sense of it all. I'm Amy Edmonds, former legislator from Cheyenne. Thanks for being here. Hey guys, so today on Let's Talk Wyoming, I am thrilled to welcome for you all someone who probably needs no introduction, especially if you've ever turned the dial during your morning coffee run or your 80-mile Wyoming commute. Glenn Woods is a longtime host of Wake Up Wyoming, the biggest morning radio show in the state. His voice has been bouncing off of pickup trucks from Cheyenne to Cody for years. He's smart. He's funny. He's got that rare talent of making politics, weather, and the occasional cow story genuinely entertaining at 6 a.m. Now, Glenn and I go way back when I was at the Wyoming Liberty Group, and I used to join him on the show almost weekly, and we talk a little bit about that in this interview. He's got a gift for keeping things light, even when we're deep in the policy weeds, and trust me, in this state, the weeds grow deep. So buckle up, pour yourself a cup of coffee, or if it's in the evening, a glass of whatever your favorite thing is, and enjoy this conversation with one of the best voices in Wyoming radio. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Let's Talk Wyoming. It's great to have you here. I am really excited this week because I have a special guest and someone who I've spent a lot of time talking to over my career. I really enjoy him, and you all are going to recognize him immediately. He has the hottest, the biggest morning show in the state of Wyoming. Our guest today is Glenn Woods. Glenn, great to have you.
It's about time we talked again. It's been a while.
It's been a while. I know. For those of you who don't know, when I worked at the Wyoming Liberty Group, Glenn and I think we had a weekly. Did we come on weekly, Glenn?
I think we did. Yeah. See, when I first came to Wyoming, I was looking for some place where I can get some good inside information and news. And at the time, the only thing that existed was Wyoming Liberty Group. So I contacted you guys, and yeah, you became a weekly segment for a while.
Yeah, we all of us analysts kind of switched places, you know, took turns and talked to you about whatever. And I was usually always talking to you about education, and then sometimes the budget, and yeah, those were fun. Fun days. Good times. So you have gone from, I think you might have been in Gillette at the time. You've gone right from that to running and hosting one of the biggest, if not the biggest, morning radio show in the state of Wyoming. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got to where you're at?
Well, I grew up on a little island off the coast of the Everglades, west coast of Florida, so I'm an island boy, and Jimmy Buffett lived a couple of islands up from me. So when I hear Margaritaville on the radio, I stand and remove my hat, because that's my anthem. After I got done home carrying my dad through Alzheimer's, I went looking for another talk radio station. I was on a small network out of Tampa Bay, and I found out the owner had been arrested for embezzling $22 million from his investors. So the only place that had an opening was Gillette, Wyoming, and I had never heard of it. And when I got out there, I thought, oh my God, where the hell am I? Well, after being there for a while, I got a hold of Town Square Media, and I pitched to them an idea, because having a talk show host out in Wyoming, which of course is such a population-wise small state, they have several stations in markets that really can't afford a good talk show host. So when they hire someone, either they're going to get what they paid for, the guy's going to suck and they're going to fire him, or they're going to get someone good who's going to get hired away. So I said, how about every time you lose someone, you just connect the station to me? Give me half the salary, you keep half. And so they're saving money, I'm making more money. So I'm on 4 stations right now. The show is heard from the Montana border down past Denver and just as wide. But what's interesting, Amy, about how this industry is changing, what you're doing right now is where it's going. Yeah. Almost half my audience listens off their mobile device. Oh. And if they don't listen live, they listen later. Yeah. So that's where people used to have radios everywhere they went. Now people have their cell phone everywhere they go. So my show is also a podcast. It has to be. Yeah. Because that's where the industry is going.
Yeah, I mean, here in the Edmonds household, Harlan listens to you in the morning on his drive to work, and I will listen in podcast form later right on, because I am a huge podcaster. And I think that's, as you said, that's kind of where the industry is going. I think the conveniences of it is what I really love. And for women especially, I mean, I can listen while I'm doing chores, working the dog, you know, whatever I'm doing, I can take it with me and make it fit to my lifestyle.
Right.
Yeah, which works. Well, that's exciting. You've spent, so how many years in Wyoming now?
16. Oh. I thought about that recently and I thought, where did that time go? I just couldn't understand. I had been here for that. I really didn't mean to be here that long, but I don't think I really want to leave either. I mean, I've gotten ingrained into Wyoming. I like it here. I'm not going anywhere. When I showed up, I thought, well, this is a temporary thing. No, I don't think it is.
Yeah, obviously not. This is home to you now, Glenn. You are part of Wyoming. You can't
go. Oh, hey, next weekend I get to do the Chugwater Chili Festival. So you see, that's the kind of stuff that's home to me now.
I'm another just institution of Wyoming, the Chugwater Chili Festival. Yeah. Yep, excellent. Well, I mean, I think in so many ways, the radio, though, in Wyoming is still such an important thing because it is such a windshield state. I mean, everywhere we go, you're driving long distances.
Right, right. And then, of course, there are a lot of people who work way out. I mean, from oil field workers to people on their ranches, and they keep their radios with them too. So yeah, it's not just a matter of a lot of time on the road, but it's a lot of time working out in places where there really is nothing else. And so listening to a good radio show and someone they know, that's that connection with the audience.
Yeah.
That really is important to them. So I get all sorts of people can not only call my radio show, they can text me off of the radio show app. And so the number of people who text me while they're way out in the middle of nowhere working, just because I'm company to them, I'm a voice that's with them.
Yeah, that's so lovely. That's so lovely. Which is a great segue into my next question, or at least my next conversation with you about, you know, obviously the difference between podcast and radio is that live call-in section. And I know that podcasters do live call-ins, obviously. And at some point, Let's Talk Wyoming will probably get there. But you have spent years listening to Wyoming citizens call in and talk to you.
Right.
You more than anyone in the state are really reaching out and talking to people consistently.
Yeah.
Monday through Friday.
That's the reason that when I was growing up at Island, I was listening to On the Other Coast is Miami and Larry King was on. And that's what got me into talk radio, listening to Larry King back when he was only on WIOD in Miami. And so now that I'm doing this, it's to me the connection. When people text me or call me, I always call them by first name. I cringe when they call me Mr. Woods. I hate that. We are people who know each other and it's a community. And one of the nice things about having a show that's heard over that much of the region is there are people in one part, like recently, a guy named Chet who listens way down in Yoder, if you even know where Yoder is.
Oh, yes, I do.
Bottom of the state.
It is. Close
and
to me.
And he ends up asking a comment, could you ask so-and-so DJ up in Gillette if... And so if you think about it, between Yoder and Gillette, they're way apart from each other. And yet that helps that conversation across the entire region. And so I do find that people in Wyoming like to talk to each other and they like to have a forum to talk to each other through. So it's not just a conversation with me. It's a conversation with each other.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you talk to folks, I mean, obviously you get all kinds of callers. Do you have any techniques or tips you'd love to pass on to a young podcaster like myself about how you handle? Because I'm assuming, I know because I've listened to you, sometimes you get some angry folks, you get some unhappy folks. What do you normally do?
The first thing I notice is if someone is used to talking on the radio, because there are someone who calls shows on and often, they'll be good at it and they'll know how to get to the point. Most people who call in really have never done this before and they're a bit nervous. So the first thing I try to do is make them feel comfortable. And then after I've gotten them calmed down a little bit, I try to get them focused on what they want to talk about. Because people, when they make a point, they tend to drift off to the left or right or wherever, and then they forget what they were talking about in the first place. So I try to grab hold of where are they going with this and try to steer them toward their point. Because I don't really want the caller to look bad, except for Dave from San Francisco. He calls in now and then, and Dave is just a jerk. So I just let him look bad. But other than that, the other callers, I really want them to get the point out. So I'll help them with their call. And if I disagree with them, that doesn't mean I've got to be mean to them. Just because we have a disagreement, I want the discussion. So I try to come across in a way to let them know that just because I'm disagreeing with you doesn't mean we're going to have a hard time with each other. I am genuinely interested in what you have to say. And that makes someone feel comfortable. There's also one other thing, and Amy, you know this, because I did this to you every time. When people are a guest on a show, they tend to be tense at first. If you could see them, they will have their arms crossed or they're just sitting stiff. And so the first thing I would do to you, Amy, whenever you came on the program, is I would start by saying the most outrageous thing that you didn't expect to come out of my mouth, just to get you to laugh.
Yep.
And immediately you were at ease because you knew, hey, it's just me and I made you laugh. Now we can talk about anything.
Right.
And that's when not just a caller, but when you have a guest, I think whatever tactic you use, relax them in some way. Don't tell them to relax because then they'll be the opposite of that. Make them relax.
Yeah.
And then you're going to have a great interview.
It's true. I mean, honestly, I think I learned my speaking and radio chops from you all those weeks of doing those interviews. And yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Helped a lot. So great. I love to hear the different issues that people want to talk about with you. So I want to ask you about that. I want to ask you, and so we're going to morph into kind of right now in politics right now in Wyoming, yep. How it's been in the last year or two and the calls that you're getting. I'd love to hear your thoughts on where politics are in the state of Wyoming based on what you're hearing from these callers.
Energy, of course, is a big deal. Property rights is a big deal.
Yeah.
And of course, taxation, mainly when it comes to taxation. And this is where it's an interesting dichotomy. People want to keep the money they earned. We all understand that. On the other hand, people want those services, which if they want those services, which means we're going to have to tax them for that. So what is reasonable? Also, people are big on property rights in the state of Wyoming, too, because that's part of their legacy. It's even, in many cases, their family legacy. So those are the things that people in Wyoming are big on, which are really traditional values. I also find people in Wyoming don't really care if somebody comes to this state and they're a bit different because they came from a much different state. It's just they want to be left alone about it. Go ahead and live your different lifestyle, because many people who live out in the middle of nowhere, or if you haven't noticed, are kind of different themselves, and they just want to be left alone. So it's a really live and let live kind of state. They don't like government in their business, you know, as little as possible, but they would like to have government help them out when they actually need something, like make sure that road is fixed, make sure they're plowed in the wintertime, and other basic services that people think that they're supposed to have. I do find it is one of the most conservative states in the nation. I think the only criticism I would give is sometimes the isolation cuts them off from what is really happening in the rest of the world. And so that's where I get some of the fun conspiracy theorists that I talk to from time to time. Since they're not exactly living in the rest of the world, they don't know what actually is happening.
Yeah.
So they make it up. Conspiracy theorists are a lot of fun to talk.
Well, I think the pandemic drove a lot of people even more internally, and drove them especially into their computers and or their, you know, their phones in ways that sort of got them into algorithms. And you know probably that algorithms tend to radicalize people because they just always feeding them what they want to see. And so they go down rabbit holes and then they never get out of them.
Right. And I think this is part of what founded Wyoming. There is a big mistrust of big government.
Sure. Absolutely.
Part of who people are out in the state of Wyoming, which I don't always think is a bad thing. I mean, a lot of times I think that is a good thing.
Yeah.
But then again, when we need them, you're going to have to trust them. And that's kind of hard to do.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one that obviously top of mind, as you said, property tax is a big one. And hearing and listening to that debate is really fascinating, because obviously we've seen I think they're coming down now, some significant property tax increases through the COVID time. And in many ways, it was market driven. I mean, people were buying property in Wyoming sight unseen. Mm-hmm. They were not, and for more than the listing price, right? And so we saw homes, I mean, even where I live in my HOA, people were buying lots, drove those prices up. And so I think there was a real need, and there continues to be a real need, for some kind of relief for those increases, and also some kind of control that increase doesn't grow government. Because what happens when the counties get more, they tend to, do more, grow more.
Here's something that I recently found. There's some complaints from Wyomingites about the solution. So the state wanted to reduce property taxes by a certain amount. But in order to do so, people would have to fill out the paperwork in order to qualify for it. And the paperwork became very confusing.
Yeah.
And so the bureaucracy to get the cuts was driving people absolutely nuts. So I'm interested still, because it's been brought up again, the idea of getting rid of a property tax in the state of Wyoming and replacing it with a sales tax, I think is an interesting idea if they do it right. Now, a little while ago, Governor Gordon was on my program, And he agreed that he thinks it's an interesting idea if they can write that legislation right. I am a believer, and that's why I wrote a book called The Uncomplicated Life. If it's a big, thick, confusing mess of legislation or a contract someone wants you to sign, don't do it. If it's simple to understand, and that doesn't mean people are stupid, it's just it's straightforward and simple, it's probably a better path. So the property tax relief that we're getting in the state of Wyoming, it's a good idea, but I think the way that they're doing it is overcomplicated and just confusing the hell out of people.
Yeah, I mean, I think it can be challenging. I mean, I know quite a few people that have applied and have gotten it, but they all say this very similar things that, you know, I had to do this, I had to do that, I had to show this, I had to show that. And there's no doubt that just a across the board reduction is not confusing or difficult. So you're not applying for anything, you're not anything. Yeah, so I agree. And, you know, this conversation around just completely getting rid of property taxes is fascinating. I agree with you. I think, you know, obviously we're going to see on the ballot this 50% reduction with no sort of backfill, as they're saying, to any of the particularly our hardship communities that really don't have a huge tax base to begin with. And this is really what they used for a lot of their stuff. As a property owner who pays property tax, I've said this several times and it makes people think. I don't think of my property tax as some kind of lien on my property or some issue. I see it as a service tax. I live outside of town in a gorgeous subdivision, 5 acres each. That blacktop road that comes to my house, the school bus that comes out here and picks up children, the mail service that drops mail off, those are all services that add value to my home. If none of those things were there, my home would not have the value that it has. Right. The ambulance that can come out here, the police car that can come out here, the fire truck that can come out here are all adding value and keeping my home safe. Right. And so I see that. However, as you know, as someone who's conservative, I have no problem having the conversation about, should we go to a sales tax? I think if we're going to do that, we should do it carefully and thoughtfully. So we're not harming any of the things that I want here in my home to add value to my home.
Right. What's the least complicated way to pay for it? Because I've talked to some people who are county tax assessors. As this topic came up, I had some county tax assessors on my program. What I found was interesting is many of them don't even understand how the county taxes are calculated. When they come to assess your home, they look at things. Some of it's up to them what they think the value might be. They plug it into a computer algorithm and it spits out what you're supposed to pay. And so when I ask them, well, how does that algorithm work? They don't know. Which again means it's maybe too much of a complicated system. Can we come up with something simpler? So like you, I'm not opposed to paying the tax. I know we need to pay for these things, but can we come up with a system that's just less complicated than this that everybody can understand?
Yeah, no, I think that's those are all things that need to be discussed and looked at and weighing the pros and cons. Yeah, that's excellent. So property tax, obviously you said energy. What do you think? I mean, last week I did a podcast on the nuclear projects, one in Gillette, one in Casper. You still hearing things on that?
So the nuclear project, especially north of Bar None. So if you go to Casper, there's Bar None. And then north of there, Canadian Energy wants to bring in micro nuclear reactors, which is a fascinating idea. Yeah. And I find that most people have no problem with that, no problem with the nuclear facility out in Kemmer. The problem they have is, what are you going to do with that waste? And they don't want Wyoming to be a nuclear waste dumping ground. So to me, that's where the big conversation comes from, because even Radian says, well, we can go ahead and temporarily store our waste here until we figure out a permanent storage facility for the entire United States. And people really don't want that. I suggested, just to see what people would say, we've got these big open pit coal mines. You've been to them. They go way down. Okay. So as we fill those back in, can we put them in containers and put the waste way down there? Would that work? And people still didn't like the idea of the nuclear waste being in Wyoming. So that's where the big discussion is going to come around. Not that they don't want nuclear energy in Wyoming. Where do you go with the waste?
Well, I agree. I think I've seen, you know, and certainly on social media, I've seen a lot of posts. I think there's some misinformation about the amount or what kind of, you know, the amount of waste. When we talk about dumping grounds, I think people think of like massive, you know, oh my gosh. And from my understanding of both the Radiant Project and the BTXW BX, but anyway, the one in Gillette, the folks that are doing all the nuclear for our submarines, it is a small, small amount of waste. It's one of those conversations where we have to think, I think a couple of things. Number one, we have to find out and ask, is this technology producing lesser and lesser amounts of waste? Are they finding ways in which, and the answer is yes, they are, in advancing nuclear energy, which I think is a huge issue for our country. We should be going to more nuclear energy. Like I said in my podcast, outside of coal in terms of payload, do you know the other energy that is does not depend on the time of day, does not depend on the weather, and does not depend on a foreign supply chain? Nuclear energy.
I also wonder if it would revitalize some towns like Jeffrey City.
Yeah, I mean, what I loved about it, Glenn, that's so interesting is the fact that like there's communities in Alaska running, you know, these big old diesel things trying to keep energy, you know, keep the lights on for people in the middle of the howling winter. These little micro reactors could do that. Sure. It's just amazing the potentiality. I mean, there really is a market for more rural, more remote places that could provide clean energy.
Well, and I think it's also how compact it is. When we take a look at wind and solar, first thing people don't like, it's something I really can't stand either, is don't come in with artificial marketplaces, subsidies and tax breaks. Don't do that. Yep. Let them exist in the marketplace. But then the next thing is, if you open up a new coal plant and there's a new coal plant proposed for the southwestern side of Wyoming, that could happen. And other coal plants are going to stay open. They have a small footprint compared to wind and solar, which take up a massive amount of land. And it turns out when it comes to migrating animal, bird kills, bat kills, these are not good for the environment. And then when the wind turbine is finally taken down at some point, if it is, it leaves a whole lot behind because the base of that thing goes way into the ground. It's not going anywhere. Yeah. So you're talking about taking up massive swaths of land. That's what people have a problem with because they're looking out their back window where they used to graze animals or just watch nature. And it's now being filled with wind and solar farms. Mm-hmm. Rather have something that has a small footprint. Yeah. So to put up a natural gas plant, a coal plant, or a nuclear plant. That's a much smaller footprint, and it's not killing birds and bats at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that viewshed is such a, I mean, it's going to continue to be a real issue and a question in Wyoming, because you're exactly right. I mean, we live in a place where it is absolutely beautiful, and we live in a place that, quite frankly, every citizen in this state can have their home heat and cooled with coal. We don't need any of these things, but the power companies that need to diversify need the space and want the wind. But it means that the private landowner, their neighbors, and everyone around is going to lose something.
Now, this is where I wonder how much longer does this last? Because those power companies needed to diversify because they were mandated to diversify. But now with the Trump administration, those mandates are going away, but also so are the tax breaks and the subsidies. So I don't just wonder about the new projects are going to go up because that money's already in the pipeline to get, no pun intended, to get those new projects up. But what about when they run out of that money? Because they've been existing on subsidies. Do these wind and solar farms start coming down? I'm just interested to see what happens. Because as of yet, they really haven't made a profit.
Yeah. Well, and you were exactly right. I mean, I said this on my podcast the other day, one of the things that really anger people, and rightfully so, is this inequality in the marketplace when you subsidize these industries and then they start getting footholds and they're only doing well because, I mean, generally they're only doing well because they're subsidized. They're getting something to be able to make them competitive in the marketplace. Obviously, with the Trump administration, we'd all like to see a revitalization of the coal market. We'd like to see these coal plants being retrofitted and clean, you know, do all the things that they've not been doing. You know, one of the issues, you know, is that many of them have not been investing money into them to continue their life on because they think coal is slowly dying out and they don't want to. Why would you? No businessman would invest in something that's about to go away.
And not only is it coming back here in America, but also we've got Asian countries just to start over there. They're using more coal than ever before. And they want to buy Wyoming coal because it's the best coal on the planet. So now we just have to figure out how to get it to them. There is a pathway through the Panama Canal, and there's even a pathway up through Alaska, although it's a lot farther away. And then we'll see what happens with the lawsuits to open up those ports on the west coast of the United States. But yeah, coal, gas, and oil can be big exports again. They were the last time Trump was president. They can be again. Yeah. So let's see how long that takes. And then our industry can be booming again. Maybe, you know, boom, bust. That's Wyoming.
Well, there is no doubt that you have, in your many years of doing this, hear about energy all the time because Wyoming is an energy state. And it's something we care about. It's something we talk about because we know that we are turning the lights on for hundreds of millions of people all over the country.
Right. Yeah.
Pretty exciting for us. And we really, really care about it. So I'm not surprised. The nuclear thing has been really interesting to watch. I know the Minerals Committee will continue. Well, I think the next time they meet, they'll probably continue to discuss this. So we'll have to see where those projects go. So what else? What are anything on education? Are you hearing?
Yeah, I am really pleased because I've been a big advocate for it myself. Let's go ahead and diversify Wyoming schools, charter schools, private schools, homeschooling. And I was surprised when I got to Wyoming, being such a free state, that it really didn't have much of that. Well, now that's turning around, and we even have voucher programs popping up. And I've talked to a few people, Casper and Chugwater, I mentioned them earlier, that have charter schools popping up. So now I want to see where this goes. How do we set it up to make sure? Because I know there's going to probably be a court case on this at some point with school vouchers because of the way the Wyoming Constitution is written.
Maybe. We'll see. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if they're going to try it or not. Our constitution is exactly the same as Montana's.
Yeah.
Essentially, word for word, and it was overturned, you know, it was thrown out. So, but maybe. Yep. You could be right.
I would hope that would happen in the state of Wyoming because I'm a huge advocate of school choice. And if any place should have it, it should be the state of Wyoming. Education is another big one. And then the other topic is do not California-ize or Colorado-ize my Wyoming. That's a big one. Come on and enjoy. Have you heard about my Wyoming citizenship oath?
No, I don't think I have.
I wrote this a while ago, and it's all tongue-in-cheek, but it's basically, if someone moves to Wyoming from another state, welcome. Now, here are five things you have to raise your right hand and swear to do and not do in order to live in this state. Basically, how to make
them. Raise my
gift. Yeah, that's right. I would have to call it up on my website to go ahead and read it all to you, but I put it out there. And one of these days, I've tried giving it to a governor, and I've tried giving it to some state legislators to see, can you do something with this? And they always laugh at it. Nothing ever happens. So it exists on the internet as you can look it up, the Wyoming citizenship oath.
I will link it in the show notes. So I'll get the link from you, Glenn, so everybody can go look at it.
That has been a big concern because no one has any problem with more people coming to Wyoming to work here. But the state is great the way it is. And so please don't try to change us. You know, it's like when a guy meets a new girl and they really hit it off and he wants to say to her from day one, I love you too, but don't change me.
Right. Yep, that's exactly it. No, I think there's always going to be this desire to keep the state. We have this push-pull, right? We want the state to grow. We want to have a lot, but then we don't because we don't want to see with that kind of growth comes change.
And the kind of change we're talking about is look what happened to Colorado that used to be a red state. Yeah. We just don't want that here. What we want is our limited government, maximum freedom state. And that's what we really mean by that.
Yeah. What's fascinating about Colorado is if you actually read into how that state got flipped and how the Democrats really used to their advantage some pretty ugly internal fighting in the GOP, where you had folks that were demanding more far-right candidates were winning in the primaries in very moderate districts. And of course, the ending result was a Democrat won because you cannot force into a more moderate district someone who's not going to fit for the voters in that district.
Yeah.
And it happened consistently enough that they started flipping enough seats. Well,
and people in Cheyenne they're constantly telling me, they're worried that they're becoming the next bedroom community for Denver as they continue to spread, which doesn't surprise me that it's spreading out that far because living in Denver is really expensive now.
Yeah.
And so people keep trying to move out so they can have Colorado, but maintain their freedom. A little clue though, if you move over to the Wyoming border and you work in Colorado, you still owe Colorado income tax.
Yeah. And you know, I hear that every now and again, but I have to be honest with you. I think that's just an unrealized fear. I mean, I'm sure you've driven that drive. I think there are some folks that most definitely make that commute, but generally there's still a whole stretch of about 25, 30 miles of absolutely nothing before you get to Wellington.
Right.
And in the wintertime, that is not a pleasant drive.
And so, I have met and made friends with a few people who moved to Cheyenne, and they flat out said, I just had to get out of Colorado.
Yeah, I think that's more likely. People are just leaving and coming here. They're not commuting back and forth. They're not, you know, it's not bedroom community kind of things. They just come here, get Wyoming jobs, and hopefully take your oath and become Wyomingites.
So there you go. I should put that on a billboard.
Right, exactly. All right. So Glenn, your portable show, where do people find it? Where can they go find?
Well, one of the ways to do that is anywhere you go get a podcast from, just ask for Wake Up Wyoming and see if it's there. And it probably is. The other way is to download the Wake Up Wyoming app, and that's free. And so you get all these news articles, and there's a chat option when I'm on the air. So you can listen live or later off the app. And if you want to send me a text message when I'm on the air, you just hit the chat option. Other than that, there's four different radio stations in Wyoming that carry the show. So if you still like doing the old radio thing, you can go to the website and look up which station is near you, and it covers quite a bit of territory.
It's such a delight to talk to you. This was such a huge part of my life for like 4.5 years. Well, you and I would talk more than that. And yeah. I completely agree with you as someone who bonded with you over education. I'm very excited for where the state is moving. I know for some people it seems scary. I think some misinformation has made people fearful that somehow this is going to harm the public education system. It is not. And I'm excited to see where this will continue to go for all of the families who want to educate and enrich their children.
Right. Yeah. Well, in fact, I think the public education system harmed itself. So this is a good way out of it. There's some good charter schools that are popping up. And I'm really impressed with some. Don't ever tell my sister I said something nice about her. She homeschooled her two kids, and they are brilliant. And so I really am a big fan of homeschoolers. I've seen what it can do.
Yeah, agreed. I've seen lots of friends who were homeschooled. Indeed. Glenn, thank you so much for coming on. It was great to visit with you and talk to you.
Anytime you want.
Thanks. Bye. I recorded that interview with Glenn Woods last week, and in it we spoke about the education savings account. Since our comments, a new courtroom battle has indeed erupted in Wyoming over the expansion of this program. On June 17th, the Wyoming Education Association and a coalition of parents, some of them teachers, filed a lawsuit in Laramie County District Court. They claim that the Steamboat Legacy Scholarship Act, which provides $7,000 per child toward private school or homeschool tuition, intrudes on the state constitution's requirement for a complete and uniform public education system. The voucher program, funded by a $50 million appropriation, is also accused of sending public dollars to private entities not under the state's absolute control. Critically, some parents argue the program discriminates against LGBTQ students, specifically gay, transgender, and non-binary youth. Both sides are prepared for a tough legal fight. The case has been assigned to Judge Peter Frolicker, the same judge who ruled earlier this year that Wyoming must significantly boost its public school funding to meet constitutional standards. The lawsuit also asks for an immediate injunction to halt the rollout of voucher payments, though no hearing date has been set. Meanwhile, the program has already attracted nearly 4,000 applicants intent on using it this fall, who will no doubt lose this opportunity while the courts hear this out. I think you all know which side I'm on, which is on the side of parents and their right to educate their children by accessing the same public dollars they contribute. Like everyone else. It isn't about systems. For me, it's about children, period. Just as Ronald Reagan said clearly in 1982, parents should be free to choose the schools their children attend. That's the American way, giving families more freedom, not less. Amen. More freedom, not less. We shall see what the courts say. And then finally, before we sign off, I want to take a moment to acknowledge a tragic and deeply disturbing event that has shaken the political community across the country. On June 14th, in what authorities have confirmed were politically motivated attacks, Minnesota State Representative Melissa Hortman and her husband Mark were shot and killed. Minnesota State Senator John Hoffman and his wife Yvette were also wounded in a separate but coordinated shooting. These weren't random crimes. They were targeted acts of political violence carried out in the suburbs of Minneapolis. A suspect is now in custody. This was an attack not just on individuals, but on the very idea of civil service, on people who stepped up, ran for office, and did the hard, often thankless work of governing. It is an assault on our representative republic itself. Wyoming legislative leadership, Senate President Bo Bightman, and House Speaker Chip Nyman issued a joint statement. I want to share part of it with you. Quote, "This heinous act of violence against dedicated public servants strikes at the core of our democratic values. It serves as a stark reminder of the urgent need to foster civility, reject division, and uphold the principles of respect and dialogue in our society. We stand in unwavering solidarity with the people of Minnesota. We recommit ourselves to promoting peace, understanding, and unity among our state and nation." Unquote. Whatever your politics, this much should be common ground. Our elected officials deserve to go home at night, and they deserve safety. So we mourn with Minnesota, we reflect, and I hope we affirm something fundamental. Violence is not a form of political speech. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening this week. I've got some more exciting guests on tap through the summer. I am very excited about that. So hang tight. I'm also going to be doing a really fun special July 4th segment. So look for all things patriotic and some discussion about patriotism versus nationalism. All right, guys, have a wonderful week in beautiful Wyoming. Take care.